Asheville FM on WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm Bursta Goodness.
And I'm William Goodenough.
This show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio, and Berkeley Liberation Radio. Archives of the show can be heard a week after broadcast at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org and podcasting at radioforall.net. You can email us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net, and you can send us snail mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
A reminder to listeners with graphic skills, we here at The Final Straw have gotten some great submissions for sticker, poster, and merch designs for the show, but would love to see what else y'all could throw our way. If you have an idea or an image that could include the show name, ashevillefm.org/the-final-straw, and some kind of thematically related title, like a weekly anarchist radio show, or imagery, you can email designs to bursts@ashevillefm.org or mail to The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
This week we spoke with John, an anti-racist insurrectional anarchist who grew up in the U.S. South. John discusses the anti-Klan rally that happened on July 18th in Columbia, South Carolina, what he saw, the implications, who was there, and why. Apparently you, dear listeners, couldn't wait to hear this because this is not the radio version, this is the podcast version. If you're a radio programmer, know that there is swearing in this episode's music. Listener discretion is advised. If you've reached this message in error, please dial 9 to speak to an operator or simply say, operator. Or just find the version of the file on Radio for All that says radio in the title. Please note that John wished us to inform y'all that he's a kind of nervous guy who doesn't do interviews very often, and so his laughter during some of the serious points is not a sign of levity or a lack of seriousness, but more a sign of discomfort on him.
If you'd like to hear this show on a community radio station in your town, send us an email or just contact us and propose it to your local station and why you'd like to hear it. The show is free to pick up off and download or podcast from radioforall.net along with a bunch of other great programming. But please drop us a line so we can announce the station and, more importantly, to brag about it to other programmers on Asheville FM. Nyeh, 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 nyeh. On a separate tip, the main topic of our conversation on the last episode, anarchist prisoner Eric King of Kansas City will be having a birthday on August 2nd. Drop him a line, share some of your own poetry, make friends, whatever. You can write Eric at Eric King, number 270-90045. CCA Leavenworth, 100 Highway Terrace, Leavenworth, Kansas, 66048. Also, he has an Amazon wish list where you can buy books online and get this voracious reader. Details on that or direct deposits to his commissary can be found at supporterickking.wordpress.com.
Michael Kimball is a self-described black gay anarchist who is currently serving a life sentence in a maximum security facility in Alabama for the self-defense killing of a, quote, white homophobic racist bigot, unquote. Mr. Kimball is a writer and is part of the Free Alabama Movement, which is a group that organizes against prison work conditions by putting together work strikes and work stoppages around the state of Alabama. More about them at freealabamamovement.wordpress.com. Michael Kimball has a parole date set for December of this year, and it's a long time in coming. Please stay tuned for any support that he needs, as well as to read his writings at anarchylive.noblogs.org. Receiving mail while incarcerated has been shown to be very important, firstly to help combat the brutal isolation which prison forces people to undergo, and secondly to demonstrate to prison officials that people's cases do not go unnoticed. To write at Michael Kimball, address your letters to Michael Kimball, K-I-M-B-L-E, number 138017, 3700 Holman Unit, Atmore, that's A-T-M-O-R-E, Alabama, 36503.
On Wednesday, July 22nd, Tyler Lang pled guilty in a non-cooperating plea agreement to a single count of conspiring to travel in interstate commerce with the purpose of damaging an animal enterprise. Specifically, Tyler's charges stem from the mink release and vandalism of a fur farm carried out by him and Kevin Olaf, a.k.a. Kevin Johnson, in August of 2013. Tyler, like Kevin, faces a maximum of 5 years in prison and 3 years of supervised release. He also faces the possibility of hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines and restitution. Tyler is currently not in custody, though his sentencing has been set for November 9th, 2015, at the federal courthouse in Chicago, Illinois. Please stay tuned for info on court support at that time. A show of community support for Tyler in the courtroom on that day would help lift his spirits and keep him strong. You can see updates and information about his and Kevin's case at supportkevinandtyler.com.
August 8th, 2015 marks 37 years of unjust imprisonment for the Move 9, who are part of the Move organization founded by John Africa. The Move organization is a multifaceted group whose tenets include anti-slavery, anti-racism, anti-industry, anti-colonialism, and pro-revolutionaryism, among many others. The Move 9 are a group of men and women who have been imprisoned since August 8, 1978, following a massive police attack on their home, on them at their home in a residential neighborhood of Powelton Village in Philadelphia. The government and the Philly PD dropped a bomb on their house, killing 11 people, including children. One officer died in this attack, and it's been proven that none of the Move 9 could have possibly been responsible. Despite this evidence, they are still held captive by the retributious state. On Saturday, August 1st, there's a call for support at a community town hall meeting to demand the Justice Department take action to investigate the case and wrongful imprisonment of the Move 9. This meeting will take place in Philadelphia, PA, from noon to 4 p.m. at the African American Museum located at 701 Arch Street, downtown Philadelphia. Topics to be covered will include the destruction of the house, the beating of Delbert Africa, the trial of the Move 9, and the illegal practices of the Pennsylvania Parole Board. For more information on, about this organization and about the Move 9's case, people can go to www.onamove.com. And to hear our past episodes on the Move 9, check out thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org and search MOVE9.
As a final little heads up to folks in the listening audience, I'd suggest you check out the July 9th, 2015 episode of the Blog Talk Free Alabama Movement podcast. The show is produced by prisoners within the Alabama and Mississippi prison system and connects them with the folks on the outside and folks incarcerated across the U.S. This episode features a convo between members of FAMM, Imam Sadiq Abdullah Hassan of the Lucasville Death Row prisoners currently held at OCF Youngstown, as well as Alex of Prison Legal Newsletter. You can find links to this episode and tons of other interviews and resources up on the site supportprisonerresistance.noblogs.org. What you say, what you say, what you say, what?
Donald Trump is the son of a real estate mogul. He went to the Wharton Business School before inheriting his daddy's fortune and blowing it, filing for bankruptcy several times. He's an obnoxious know-nothing blowhard who still insists that he has somehow earned his position of privilege in our world. In the midst of his run for U.S. president, Trump made some controversial comments, claiming that Arizona Senator John McCain, a Vietnam vet and former POW, is not a war hero. As a consequence, the mainstream media has gone totally bonkers. Apparently, it's unthinkable to question McCain's war hero status. I'm not sure why. So look, we've got a situation here, similar to something a math whiz friend of mine once described. He said that if you lock 100 chimps in a room with a computer keyboard over a long enough trajectory, one of them, clicking at random, will type a Shakespearean sonnet. Now, what we're dealing with isn't a sonnet, but the same scenario. If a chimp named Donald Trump babbles long enough, he'll say something I agree with. So don't take this as an endorsement of that jackwagon, since I'm probably going to soon be running against him. But I agree with Trump for once. The fact is, John McCain is no hero of any kind. Donald Trump got it right. John McCain was a graduate of the Naval Academy, and when his country called on him to suppress democracy in a foreign land by obliterating innocent men, women, and children, John McCain flew 23 bombing missions over Vietnam, killing possibly tens of thousands of total strangers before he was shot down and held for 5.5 years as a prisoner of war. Poor deluded hierarchs think McCain is a hero for serving his country, which means he followed the orders of an idiot in a suit, and he slaughtered unarmed strangers who had done absolutely nothing to him. If blind obedience to orders to kill makes someone a hero, then the serial killer in the Son of Sam murders, who simply obeyed the orders to kill given to him by his dog, should have been given the ticker tape parade better than a life sentence. 23 times, John McCain hit a button to unleash bombs on people minding their own business in their own country. I remember 8 years ago when McCain ran for president against Obama. McCain tried to make it appear that Obama was close friends to former weatherman Bill Ayers, whose group detonated a bomb in the U.S. Capitol. In that bombing, no one was hurt. It seemed hypocritical to me that McCain, who dropped tons of bombs 23 times, criticized Bill Ayers' bombing of the U.S. Capitol, when Ayers courageously and thoughtfully opposed the illegal war in which McCain was a participant. At the time, I was inspired to write this poem. Bill Ayers was wrong for making a bomb, or so says John McCain, because women and children Bill never killed, dropping it from a plane. So why was John McCain a hero again? Oh yeah, he was held 5.5 years as a POW. But McCain killed thousands in his bombing runs. To contrast his situation with mine, I killed one guy and I've been held by an illegitimate rogue state for 24 years and counting. McCain killed thousands and served 5.5 years. I don't hear Senator John McCain, the lawmaker, proposing to revise his country's criminal codes to reduce killers' sentences to 5.5 years. By all rights, that murderous maniac should still be in custody. Unabomber Ted Kaczynski killed a fraction of 1% of the number of people McCain blew to pieces, and he's buried in the basement at the Federal Super Duper Max in Colorado, while McCain pontificates his hierarch madness from the floor of the U.S. Senate. In a sane world, Ted Kaczynski and John McCain would trade places. Ever read Kaczynski's Industrial Society and Its Future? Awesome read. He spends a little too long in his critique of the over-socialized leftist, but it's still awesome. And I don't care how long you lock that monkey John McCain in a room, nothing nearly that profound would ever emerge from his random clacking on the computer keyboard. But let's lock him in there anyway, and let's stop calling war criminals heroes. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from a Southern Ohio correctional facility in Lucasville. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at SeanSwain 243-205, P.O. Box 45699, 1724 State Route number 728, Lucasville, Ohio 45699. To read some of Sean's writings and learn more about his case, check out seanswain.org.
This week on The Final Straw, we are talking to a comrade named John who was present at the July 18th counter-protest for the KKK in Columbia, South Carolina. Thanks for coming on, John.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
First of all, would you like briefly describe what was going on the day for the benefit of people who haven't heard yet?
Yeah, sure. So at 1:30, there was a call out to meet up at a location on the USC college grounds, which is about 4 blocks south of the Capitol. And it was a call from like Anti-Racist South Carolina, which is some sort of anti-racist group in South Carolina, I'd imagine. So there were about 40 people that showed up to that and had big banners that declared being against white supremacy. And one of the cooler banners was an American flag and a Confederate flag on fire. And that said Carolina anti-racists. So I think it was good to like show that or whatever. But that group marched up Sumter Street, which is runs along the east side of the Capitol. And really didn't gain much attention at all until we got to the corner of the Capitol. Once we got there, there was already the Black Educators for Justice /RBG Columbia rally happening. That was a Black Power rally /anti-white supremacy rally. Mm-hmm. And most of us just kind of hung out there for a while, not trying to disrupt it. Because originally the news had said that the RBG group and the KKK had the same rally section point and it would have an overlap of an hour, and so we were kind of waiting to see what would happen, because it kind of we would imagine that the RBG group wouldn't leave and then there'd be some kind of scuffle right there, but friends from South Carolina actually gave us information that the Klan was meeting was now moving to the south side of the state house and that there was already barricades set up and there were already some Klan supporters as well as a lot of counter-protesters. Mm-hmm. So we made our way down there. And the Klan was scheduled to go on at 3, and I think this was probably like 2:30, 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we got there, we got confronted by some neo-Nazis screaming white power, yeah. And there was a confrontation there. And cops kind of rushed in, but surprisingly there weren't too many of them. But anyhow, the Klan came in around 3:30, and it turned out it was KKK mixed with National Socialist Movement, and they weren't wearing their robes. They were all wearing kind of like a military-style...
Fatigues,
yeah, with little... There was a differentiation. If there was the Klan, they had the little Klan logo that's a white cross inside of a red circle with a red drop of blood. And if they were National Socialist Movement, it's like an American flag with a swastika in the middle of it. As they came in, they were protected by police. And at first, people just kind of were yelling at them. I'd say there were probably about anywhere between like 500 and 1,000 counter-protesters mm-hmm. in the very beginning. Maybe less. Maybe like 500 in the very beginning. And it seemed like people were just kind of content to spit and yell at them. But then as soon as they got into the little gated area in the south side of the state house, I don't know what happened right at that moment because I wasn't there, but I saw the crowd surge and...
The gated area is where they had their permit to protest. And
I saw the crowd surge and a bunch of white people that I had seen supporting the Klan run the opposite direction. and then I looked up and I just saw like bottles and rocks in the air for a second. And then I saw a few people get arrested, and I guess there was some kind of clash that happened as they were coming in. And then while the rally was happening, it was funny, they didn't have, like, a sound system, so it was just, like, 25 people yelling incoherently at one another without anyone hearing for a while. And during the rally, someone, I don't know who, stole a Confederate flag from either a supporter or from an actual Klansman and ran away, and they burned it, and then the police went that way, which was around the east side of the state house. But it was kind of just like a tense moment where I wasn't sure what we were going to do, and no one was really sure. There was like a lot of yelling back and forth. Some like pro-Klan or pro-Confederate supporters
mm-hmm.
were fought. That's when I first noticed there was a really large contingent of blood, like a Piru, whatever, Damu gang members in the front. But then I also noticed with them several Crips, because it was people in mostly blue with them throwing C's in the air. And then also a contingent of kids wearing mostly black bandana print stuff, which I think is Gangster Disciples, which is like a Chicago-based gang. And that, I was like, oh, this is cool. These people are close to each other and not having fights and just kind of like tearing up Confederate flags already. The police ended up cutting the rally an hour short because they felt like they couldn't control the crowds, it seemed like. I mean, I'm sure the KKK is like, they were silencing us because we were speaking mm-hmm. truth to power, but whatever. And as that was happening, the police sort of, where the way they came in, they formed a much wider line so people couldn't get as close to the Klan. But then we noticed that the line only went about 15 cops long. So several of us, and by us I mean like my friends, which are anarchist anti-racists,
mm-hmm.
Along with a crew of what seemed like Crips, because it was dudes in all blue, mm-hmm. Walked just beyond those cops and then kind of cut off the route. And then cops started pushing, and one of the younger black men that I was around said, let's just go to the street. We can just cut them off there. And so I was like, all right, man, this is... And I could see a really, like, tall man, tall black guy was, like, doing the image of, like, punching your fist, like getting ready to fight. And I was mm-hmm. like, man, this is crazy. There's so many cops here, but they're not really doing a very good job of controlling this. This is going to go crazy. And so we were walking down onto the street on, I guess, the east side of the, I don't know, there's an underground parking deck that you have to kind of like walk over the entrance of, and so there's two adjacent sidewalks at that point, and so all the like anti-Klan people are on the left side and the Klan and the cops are on the right, and I saw a couple bottles being thrown across at that point. I was like, this is crazy, the cops aren't mm-hmm. doing anything. And then we got onto the street, and a bunch of us of all kinds realized that there's like a little barricade in front of the state house. I guess essentially it's like a 9/11 precaution, I think, so people can't drive car bombs in, but it sort of made a wide sidewalk area. And so the Klan was on the sidewalk, and then there were cops. The Klan was on the sidewalk closest to the building, and then the cops were right outside of them, and then there was just tons of people that were yelling at them. I think the first thing I saw was people, a few bottles get thrown at the client, like, and these aren't glass bottles. It was mostly like full Gatorade bottles and water bottles, and hit some people. And that's what I noticed also, which something you said, was that people were using, the Klansmen and Nazis were using like small children that they had and were putting them in front of them.
Yeah.
So that they could protect themselves from violence, which is just despicable.
Well, what about people who had youth who, who were in the anti-racist
Yeah, there were
side?
Definitely at least a friend of ours brought kids because I think that they wanted to show them that it's important to fight against white supremacists when they organize, especially in the Southeast. But those folks had their kids behind them at all points, especially if it got tense. Like, they wanted the kids away from things, and we all kind of made sure to keep the kids away from conflict, as opposed to these Klansmen who were like...
Where's your 14 words now?
Like, yeah.
Securing a white future.
And I heard those kids were anywhere from, like, 4 to maybe 10 years old.
Yeah, there was, like, a kind of hilarious... in a bad way, but there's like a picture of some like crying baby skinhead, which is a funny, it's f***ed up because I don't think that they should have brought their kid to that, but it's funny because he does look exactly like a miniature, like it's like a little bald white boy.
That sounds like when attached to the Dixie B. Dam presentation that happened here in town,
yeah,
someone shared a story of this media person, like the skinhead getting yelled at who had a kid, and then the media, like, putting in their mic and, like, hey, is it okay for me to ask your kid a question? Like, yeah, that's fine. Like, points to the kid and says, like, hey, would you want to talk? Yeah, totally. How does it make you feel what these people around you are saying about what your dad is doing and how you're dressed? And the kid just, like, looks and just, like, starts bawling.
Whoa, that I didn't see that. Thing. That's amazing. It probably is where that photo is from.
And then they're like, okay, enough, stop.
I'm surprised they let the kid. I don't know. That's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But as we got to the sidewalk, there's open confrontation or like verbal slash physical ish. But I think the first thing I saw was someone started spitting on this one Klansman or neo-Nazi. It was hard to tell, but he had a really big Confederate flag. And the guy was like, spit on me again, boy. And then the guy did. And then the Klan or whatever, the white man with the flag, tried to attack the person. Then people pushed him back. A cop pushed him back as well. And then... almost simultaneously to my left, a man, I'd say like late 20s, black man got out of the crowd and just like slugged a KKK guy right in the face. Like it looked like a slow motion movie or something where you see the face go. Mm-hmm. And the cops grabbed him, and then another guy who turned out to be his brother tried to de-arrest him. A bunch of us tried to de-arrest the man that was de-arresting, and it turned into a little melee. A cop got knocked on the ground. Another person was arrested. Another, like a white anti-racist protester, was arrested by the police. And then that sort of was a little confrontation zone right there. And then from my experience, what happened was I was there getting pushed up against that barricade that I talked about earlier by the police. And so I hopped over it and then was in the streets. And that's when I realized, looking around, that there was probably a couple hundred people just in the streets, like ready to fight the Klan. And I'd already started seeing kids, mostly young black kids, but other people as well, with Confederate flags that have been snatched from Klan and Klan supporters. And at least at that moment, I thought, huh, this could actually turn into a real riot. Like, the police do not control the streets of Columbia right now. This, like, amalgamation of, like, Bloods, Crips, gangster disciples, anarchists, mm-hmm. parents, some Latino children are who run the streets right now. And there kept being more, like, fights. And a thing that I noticed is that the police, I think because they're overwhelmed, wouldn't arrest people if you, like, hit a Klansman with a rock or a bottle. But if you, like, actually physically got them, then they got arrested. And at that point, so we marched for a while alongside and eventually basically ran the Klan into the parking deck where their cars were parked. And then the police formed a pretty strong cordon around that. And a funny scene ensued where there'd be, like, Klansmen, like, mooning people because they're just fucking idiots. And people were just yelling. But what happened right there was one of the cooler celebratory moments I've experienced in my life, where once people couldn't really get at the Klan, but we were still, like, waiting, you'd see just, like, tons of kids and adults just with the Confederate flags, like, tearing them up and spitting on them. And, like, I saw a really cool picture of the three different gangs I mentioned earlier posing in a picture. Like, kids from those gangs all posing together, throwing up, like, neighborhood signs. And then all with, like, torn Confederate flags and, like, posing for pictures like that. And then, like, other dude, like, peeing on the Confederate flag. And, like, and it was really positive feeling. Like, I was out there like hugging people and like giving people daps and stuff, and it felt really like, I don't know, the most positive experience of violence that I've ever had, where it was a really celebratory moment between different gangs and different people of different races. And people, I remember, like, friends of mine telling me that, like, people were like, hell yeah, there's white people out here trying to fight the Klan too, and, like, mm-hmm. hugging, and, like, people were like, I don't know, it was just a really amazing, like, it made me tear up, sort of. And mm-hmm. then I remember one guy was like, yeah, man, this is the new South, y'all are the old South, this is the new South, and that was really moving, and I was kind of glad I was wearing sunglasses, because I think people, it was, like, not a moment to be teary-eyed, because mm-hmm. you had to be serious, but it was also amazing. What else? And then what happened next? I try to remember now. Louisiana, Mississippi, Detroit, and Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, and Cali, and New York City. This for my Compton niggas, my DC killers. I'm trying to have thriller like Ray for every nigga. For that hardhead who wake up every morning trying to get it. Who went from rocking dickens to EV who's on you bitch. For my niggas in the pen, keep your head up. You feel your nigga boosted, throw your set up. Dallas, all the 50 states, every nigga who hate, I'm reppin', bitch, I'm a star. See, women been getting paid, my cars represent me, especially the 108. I rep for the bad bitches, I love how they booty shake. I'm reppin' this throwaway, cause bad rules ain't safe. I'm reppin' for all the gangsters, can't see it no other way. One more time for Trill, cause I promised them we was straight. We rap stop, I represent, 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 we rap stop, I represent. Put your motherfucking hood up. I represent. Put your motherfucking hood up. I represent. Nigga. I represent.
What do you talk about? The car.
Yeah. Okay, so the next thing that. So for. I would say, like, in my. It felt like an hour, you know, of this, mm-hmm. but probably it was like 20 minutes of the Klan and the Nazis.
Moving people.
Being stuck inside of the parking deck, which really felt crazy. Like, I think that there wasn't very much media there. But I feel like it felt like, I don't know, just weird to be like, you guys are stuck in this fucking parking deck and people are waiting to beat you. Mm-hmm. But so eventually the police kind of like cordoned a line off the west side of the parking deck, I guess, and the west exit, which led up to the state house again. Mm-hmm. Around the corner did. But the way that the route they gave the Klan led up to the state house. But the cops kind of cordoned off an area so that the Klan vehicles could get out. And once again, a thing happened where, like, I think other people realized this too, but I saw this where they were making a line, but their line only went so far. And so the first few cars got away, and then there's this Klanswoman and man driving like a drop top like Chevy, and everyone was like, "F y'all," because you could see them. And so I think everyone ran around and tried to like bang on their car, and they were like flip people off. And then the next vehicle up was this black SUV driven by a guy from the National Socialist Movement, who I think is from another part of the country. But he,
Kansas.
Yeah, so, oh yeah, people saw his license plate and said Kansas. But people ran up to his car and he was like blah blah and said like swearing at people. And then I think he called people a racial slur. I think he called everyone like monkeys or something. And then in like kind of a cool guy fashion tried to like speed off like and then, but I think in fear slash like, well, probably really just fear, but also like trying to look cool, I guess insecurity, hit the gas really hard and then turned the corner and then ran straight into a light pole. And it was, that was like the, it felt like you were in a movie. Like people were like, yeah, and like cheering and like being like, you don't know how to drive, you ugly motherfucker, or whatever. And like I saw like a white guy, old white guy and a black guy like high-fiving, and people like putting their arms around each other, and I was like, man, this is the greatest day I've ever experienced. And people all ran up to the car, and I hear people tried to maybe break windows out of the back of it. I was at the front. I saw some people trying to move the light pole that had been dislodged into the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see any of the next thing, but there's a lot of documentation. But at that exact moment, I think a crew of kids like had foresight to go even farther away from the police, basically near the state house. It's like two blocks up. And they were just waiting and just started pelting KKK. There's a video online of kids pelting a KKK truck with rocks. And then also like some Klan supporter got jumped by what I assume is Blood's, like, literally flame, like, wearing, like, red pants that had, like, gang bandana print. I don't know what else to say. But just, like, being the shit out of him in the middle of the street. And then in that same video, though, you see, like, somebody else being like, welcome to SC, motherfucker. And then throwing up C's and wearing blue. So that, like, even in that moment, there was, I guess, gang unity. And I also heard from a friend that was more ARAE, which is anti-racist action, which is, like, a particular kind of anti-racist, said that behind us, because the line of cars got stopped and the police all rushed to the messed up SUV. And someone said that people attacked a car behind it as well and tried to break windows, but I didn't see that. Eventually, the police took over the intersection. I think some people got detained right there, but I don't think anyone actually got arrested right at that moment, but maybe. And there's a lot of other stuff happening. Like, I didn't see nearly everything that happened. But we marched back up to the state house, and then I saw kind of another celebratory moment where people were just, like, tearing flags. And at that point, like, little, like, my friend's kids, who were, like, young boys, were burning a flag with some other kids. And a cool thing, I saw people tying the Confederate flag around their shoes and, like, stepping on it as, like, a sign of disrespect. And so, I know, all in all, it was a really nice day.
It was
very hot. It was, like, almost 100 degrees, and it's very humid. And but people held on, and, like, we just had some water bottles. We're giving out to people, and that, like, I heard from some people that they had, like, I think some people aren't really comfortable around, like, street people. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I don't know, maybe have, like, a fear, which is maybe understandable, of, like, people that you've heard of as being, like, criminals. But I never, I mean, I think it's, I don't know, I think if you're, like, a white anti-racist.
You're not talking about houseless folks right here.
No, no, I mean, like street organizations, like gang members. Because I think some people felt a little intimidated, maybe, like, at the very beginning when they got Confederate flags, like, when the Klan rally was still happening, there was, like, a ton of people just throwing up bees and, like, yelling, like, squad. I thought it was amazing. But I think maybe some people felt nervous. But I think that for me, at least, and maybe others, like, just yelling as much as you could at the police and at the Klan. Oh, that was another thing, was that people throughout the time were, like, just yelling at the police, saying, "F*** the police." And then also young black men were going up to black officers and calling them, like, house N-words and, like, Uncle Toms and stuff, which was really, I don't know, it was a really
intense
and, like, moving time. I don't know, that's kind of what happened.
What could you say about, like, the demographic of the police present, and how do you think the state of South Carolina and the city, the capital, how do you think that they were politicking what the police presence looked like and how they interacted with the Klan and with the crowd?
You mean, like, the racial demographic, or, like, the, like,
that's
different
part of it.
Police makeup? 'Cause,
like, racial demographic representation, and then also how do you think that they were, as a department, being directed to respond to the demonstrators and the counter-demonstrators?
I don't really – it's, like, hard to gauge how they were told to respond, because – it seemed like, I don't know, I've never really experienced the level of, like, under police. Like, I think that if all of us that were there knew how under policed it was going to be, things would have gotten a lot crazier a lot faster, but people were feeling each other out. I think, because, you know, a lot of people of, like, Anarchy World went as affinity groups, and then a lot of other folks went in their crews, and so I think you're like, yeah, my six friends are cool, but I don't know how these f***ing random weirdos. But to the racial demographics, it felt really mixed as far as I'd seen. And I'm unfortunately ignorant of South Carolina, but where I live, which is also a southern state, that's a city that's majority black, or at least majority not white, there's a lot of black police. So I think that and South Carolina is, what, I think 30% black, and Columbia is about 41% black. So I would tend to assume that the police in general are a rather mixed group of cops. And I know that, like, the chief of the Capitol Police is black, because there's that ridiculous picture of him helping out some old-ass neo-Nazi who's suffering from heat stroke that everyone's showing around like it matters.
I mean, so you're talking about, like, an old white man who is protesting on behalf of the Confederate flag being carried away by cops wrapped in the Confederate flag. Sounds like a Norman Rockwell picture to me, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they definitely... Okay, so I think South Carolina itself is really shockingly savvy when it comes to trying to quell, like, a certain level of racial, on the black side of things, violence, or, like, popular violence. So maybe that's how it's reflected. Like, in my mind, when that cop killed an unarmed black man in North Charleston, they arrested him instantly, and he's still in jail. When Dylan Roof, the white terrorist, killed 9 people in the AME church in Charleston, they tried to find him as fast as possible and then, you know, like, put him in jail. And, like, now, because all this controversy, the governor, all these people wanted the Confederate flag down, not because you think they really care about the legacy of racism, but because they don't want their state to look bad, or they don't want rioting, because understandably they're afraid, because what, Missouri's probably, I have no idea, but like, it's not as, like, the whole state of South Carolina could become in some way or another like a Ferguson or something, because it's a really impoverished state. It has a high level of organized gang activity. It's incredibly racist. There's a lot of guns. So I think that probably, yeah, like, when I said it felt like it could have turned into a riot, I mean, like, the police had real guns. They also had, like, pepper ball guns, and they had grenade launchers for, or whatever, for shooting tear gas. And they did not even seem like they were going to do that, because the only time I saw a gun out was because some old-ass racist man had a knife behind some black kids. And the cops were, like, quickly dealt with that. Not like I'm trying to give cops credit, but I think they were concerned with the idea of it turning into like a black riot, or like a popular riot, more so than being worried that like a few Klansmen maybe got punched. Mm-hmm. So I think that I think that probably having a mixed police force was really good for PR, obviously.
So you mentioned Dylan Roof earlier. Yeah. Would you talk about this day, like, within the, as much as you can, within the recent context of, like, white supremacist oppression in this country?
I mean, I can talk about what I think, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
I was like, I don't know, it's the U.S., so
give
white supremacy.
Truth,
well, I think it's important to note that the demonstration was called for a month and a day after Dylan Roof killed the 9 people in the AME church in Charleston. And so I feel like that's a really significant thing that the media just was like, it's a pro-Confederate flag rally, because that's what the Klan said. And for some reason, we take the Klan at its word. Mm-hmm. And that it wasn't like against, it wasn't a race thing. It was just about our heritage. And it was like, no, but you're the Klan. No one believes them. So Dylan Roof was what? He was a 21-year-old like white kid from South Carolina who was a racial extremist. But I think that, you know, he could have done that at any point in time. He's a racist that hated black people and believed in racial war. But I think the reason why he chose right now is because he's part of a white supremacist backlash to the recent, Black Lives Matter / like anti-police black uprising in this country. And I think he just follows, he's basically, it's like the old KKK. They're like, oh, well, these police aren't doing their job, in which the job of the police is to suppress any resistance, but especially in the South and everywhere, to suppress black people. Like, that's what this nation is built on, is the creation of, like, upping white people and the suppression of black insurrection. I think it's also notable, and I don't know if, I don't think he knew this, because he doesn't seem that smart, but maybe he did, but it was the day that he shot up that church was it was close to the anniversary of the Denmark Vesey failed insurrection, and he was a slave in South Carolina who had been a slave in Haiti and brought in, like, ideas from the Haitian Revolution, and was planning a huge insurrection that would attack Charleston, but was snitched out by a scared slave. Yeah, and Denmark Vesey was actually like a figure in that church, in the AME Emanuel Church, before it was in its current location. And so, I mean, I think he definitely knew that black churches have a huge significant presence in like black insurrection, or more modernly sort of black civil society protests in the Southeast. So, I mean, he clearly chose, he could have killed black people anywhere, right? But he chose like a very, very, it's like the biggest, oldest black church in South Carolina, mm-hmm. to my knowledge. I could be wrong, but yeah, I don't know. I think that, yeah, his whole thing is that, yeah, like the police aren't doing their job. And I think the anti-Confederate flag debate is a really easy way for the state, being the state of South Carolina, and also the state being like the United States and Obama, to ignore the fact that really what the problem is that we have a nation or whatever where black men and women and all and people of color are murdered by the police on an outrageous level, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's something like 500 police killings this year already, and that those are all related. Like the church burnings that have been happening since Dylan Roof, mm-hmm. the like I feel like there's no major distinction between Dylann Roof's murders, the church burnings, and say like the execution of Mike Brown by police in Ferguson, Missouri. I think it's all part of a similar like white supremacist framework. And I think that like certain white supremacists want to push that farther. Like they see, because there is like in white people, there's, well, I mean, not all, but there is like a fear that people have that's this, that's also a very basic point or like tenet of white supremacy is originally it was like poor white people were like could feel good because they were above blacks and above, I mean, not Latinos at the time, but above native people. And that same thing is like there's a fear of that, like that somehow
it's going to get taken away.
Yeah, it's going to get taken away, that there's going to be people breaking into their homes and raping their women. I mean, Dylann Roof literally said, "You're raping our women." Like, that is the most like basic tenet of white supremacy, is that there's this like black menace. So I don't know. And I think, sorry, I'm rambling.
That's good.
I think that the fact that the Klan chose, the Klan group is from Pelham, North Carolina, which is northern North Carolina, close to Virginia. And I think that they came to South Carolina.
The Loyal White Knights.
Yeah, the Loyal White Knights, which you can find their website online. And if you felt like it, there's a phone number there that's like a 24-hour hotline. And you could call it maybe and harass them. I don't know. Or not harass. Express your opinions.
At least tell them their website, if your web skills suck.
Yeah, yeah. They definitely have like a GeoCities style website. But it's crazy. It's really racist, obviously. Political thugs and shark suits persuade us to pull triggers and army boots. Yelling, join the armed forces. We lost the Vietnam War, intoxicated poisons. Needles and arms of veterans instead of bigger fortunes. There's still a lot of nigga calling in the corporate offices. War in the ghetto, we crabs in a barrel. They torture us, they won't be serving the beast too long. The murderers wearing police uniforms, Confederate flags. I burn B Street breakers with dances to the music I chose. In Peachtree, Atlanta, crackheads was tooting their nose in frozen corners of Chicago. Loaded up llamas, children with fofos and double revolvers, we devil incarnates. Headed for jail with Shell Gas Company in South Africa, be having us kill. Your paper money was the death of Christ. And all these shorties coming up just resurrect your life. It's like a cycle. Yo, the do-rags are back, fitted hats, snorkels, and furs. Rikers Allen buses still packed, what's the word? The drinkers stay drinking, a puffin' they herb. And I'm still enjoying life's ride one more time. The do-rags are back, fitted hats, snorkels, and furs. Rikers Allen buses still packed, what's the word? The drinkers still drinking, puffin' they herb. And I'm still enjoying life's ride. Niggas used to wear rags on their head when it was fried up. That's when we were lied to, buying hair products. Back before my generation, when our blackness started disintegrating, till awareness started penetrating. The styles come from prison. They use potatoes making liquor just to prove we some creative niggas. Turning nothing into something, it's God work. And you get nothing without struggle and hard work. War is necessary till my niggas in chains. From green to sing sing, I'm wanting y'all to know one thing. The hardest thing is to forgive, but God does. Even if you murdered or robbed, yeah, it's wrong, but God loves. Take one step toward him, he takes two toward you. Even when all else fell, God supports you. I done it, got God's son on my stomach. My heart and my lungs was affected from hennies and getting blunted. Do your body right and it loves you back. You only get one life, and yo, because of that, I'm still blazing, going out for the cause. Still rocking stock of caps, not for the waves, obeying no laws. Yo, the do-rags are back, fitted hats, snorkels, and furs. Rikers Allen buses still packed, what's the word? The drinkers stay drinking, a puffin' they herb. And I'm still enjoying life's ride one more time. The do-rags are back, fitted hats, snorkels, and furs. Rikers Allen buses still packed, what's the word? The drinkers still drinking, a puffin' they herb. And I'm still enjoying life's ride.
One of the most interesting things for me personally about the July 18th was the like various forms of unity that were happening, and
yeah.
I see it having happened in like three distinct ways. Mm-hmm. One of them was the gang unity, which you've spoken about, and the other two were like unity in support of like violent action.
Yeah.
And the other one was, which for me like was the most important one, was unity against the police.
Yeah.
I remember hearing people talk about like the very, very few like pro-police sympathizers within the anti-racist mm-hmm. crowd being like, you shouldn't talk bad about the police, and people yeah. being like, nah.
Yeah, totally.
I was wondering if you could talk about like the role of violent actions and also like the role of like anti-police sentiment within the crowd, and like how that felt for you if you saw that.
Role of Wait, role of violent actions, or like how specifically, it, or in life in general,
or no, just on the day, okay, like yeah,
peace police, sort of, is that what,
yeah, like peace police versus like people who are in support of like violent, yeah, action. Yeah.
Weirdly, I didn't. I think somehow I'm always, I don't know, I positioned myself trying to be with crazier people, maybe. So I didn't actually see anyone trying to stop people from, like, I didn't see peace police other than actual officers of the peace. Mm-hmm. But in a video, I saw some people yelling at some progressive-looking white man, and I've heard of other things where people, but it was a very, if there was that, that was a tiny minority of the people that showed up. Like, I feel like the people that showed up to this particular demonstration intended on violently confronting white supremacists. And mostly to express, I think, like, you guys are trying to claim control over our state or over the South, and people were not having it at all. Let me think. So yeah, the peace police, I don't really know. There's definitely a unity against, or of like, the crowd against police, which was amazing, kind of. Because I think that as like anarchists or whatever, we sometimes like stand out for being freaks or something. We're like, oh, and the police, and everyone's like, why are you bringing this up right now? And I did, like, I remember a point where while the rally was still happening, a bunch of anti-racist type folks or whatever with a bunch of banners had marched into the side of the rally and started chanting the KKK in a particular like kind of dancey way, and then the whole crowd started, and then someone was like, the police too. People were like, yay. And a lot of people were, yeah, were like, later when we were outside of the parking garage, I remember talking to a few young people who were saying, they were like, really, to be honest, I'm not scared of these Klansmen, we can take them any day, but mm-hmm. I'm terrified of the police. They're the ones that kill black people all the time. They're the ones that are actually the real enemy. Or maybe not the real enemy, but they are an enemy that is, like, there's a recognition that, like, both of those are the same thing. And, like, I remember somebody saying something about how, like, who cares about ISIS? These people kill way more of us every day. Mm-hmm. And then I was, like, and they were talking about the KKK, and I was, like, to be honest, the cops kill more people than anyone. And they're, like, true. Indeed, brother.
Yeah. I think there are something like 4,000 KKK members in the United States.
Yeah.
And something like 900,000 like officers who have arresting powers in the United States.
Yeah, so I mean, like, well, New York City has like 40,000 active police. Yeah. But I think that that number, the 4,000, is also maybe a random number. But I, not to quote Vice or anything, but there was a really interesting video documentary that they did recently about the rise in the Klan and their, and white supremacists in general trying to organize disenfranchised veterans, which I do think is a real thing. Like, I think that it's really important to confront these groups and to show that we are the real rebels, not the South. Like, I think that there's a real possibility for a lot of young disenfranchised white kids in the South, but the Midwest, or like rural California or wherever, to get to join up with these groups because they, in their minds, represent anti-system or whatever. And I know this is tangential, but I think it's really important somehow, and I don't know how, to try to organize something that is anti-racist, but not like ARA, because I think ARA is far too specifically focused, and at this point almost has become like, I don't have any beef with anyone in ARA. I respect what they do, but I don't think it's like as open culturally or something.
This for, is for like security reasons of the people that are involved in organizing.
Yeah, for security reasons, and also I think because at some point maybe you become
professionalization.
Yeah, it's like a professionalization. But I do think there needs to be some amount of attempt at reaching like young white people in a way that maybe a lot of us have kind of leftover like Maoist traditions inside of us, like we read Sakai, like the myth, or like settlers, and like we sort of, like, even though I don't think we really believe this, maybe some of us do have this like myth of the white working class, or like feel different or something. But I think these other groups are trying really hard to organize poor white people in the Southeast, and I think that really clearly poor white people and black people obviously have similar enemies, and like white supremacy is keeping everyone in place.
To kind of jump back to to Dylann Roof, some of the media portrayals of him have presented him as a lone gunman. Do you think that that's
that's true, or do you think that's a misrepresentation of, as if he was just a lone wolf just acting on his own and a total out of the blue thing?
Well, I think that, weirdly, it's the media misusing the concept of the lone gunman. Like, the lone gunman is, from my understanding, it's this white supremacist third positionist concept, which the third position is like some kind of weird, not totally authoritarian right-wing racialist thing. But that was actually inspired somewhat by anarchist groups slash like anti-animal or animal rights organizations in the, like, in the 80s. I think that it came out of, and this is really just me thinking, but I'm pretty sure it came out of, in the 80s and 90s, repression towards, like, larger scale white power organizations, and then them realizing that maybe, like, the way to actually commit terror, or, like, is the individual. In some ways, they're kind of like, yeah, I mean, I think he is, technically speaking, a lone wolf. Like, he believed in himself as being, like, this vanguard in, like, a... inserting himself in things, but I don't think he's a lone wolf in the way where the, what the media means, where that it doesn't mean anything. Like, I think he was inspired by other, was something called like the Last Rhodesian or something, some website that's from South Carolina. And I think that these groups are really pushing for isolated individual youth, just as ISIS does. Like, they're like, individuals should take action and thus it will inspire more people. Like, that's their whole thing. So I don't think he's a lone wolf in that he's just, it's like an isolated incident. It's very clearly part of a concerted white power slash state response to the most recent wave of anti-police black, and not just black, but mostly black uprisings in the U.S. Like, I think it was sort of ignorant for me and my friends to not assume this was going to happen soon when we were watching Baltimore and Ferguson, which is, I think a lot of us were lost as what to do after the shootings. Like, it was just sort of like, it was a reeling, wrenching feeling inside of us that this was happening again. And then these churches started burning, and I, at least to myself, was like, look, if any group comes out in support of them publicly, we have to go. Like, I think that it was imperative that people go and try to, like, crush the Klan or whatever, run the Klan out of town, as the propaganda said, because more so now than ever, like, these people are a threat, maybe. And I, like, and I think that, but I think that at least in South Carolina, you can't let, or anywhere, a group that basically is cheerleading for a person that's acting as a anti-black actor.
Like someone trying to spark the race war.
Yeah, they're essentially, but what's cool is that in some ways their race war, what they really sparked was like a, not to be too much of an insurrection anarchist, but a mini social war against them and the police. Like, what it was. Because I think that what they wanted to have happen minorly, but they wanted to have, like, large groups of black men fighting, like, dumb white people who claim they weren't for the Klan, but were just for the flag, but happened to show up at this Klan rally. And I think that what they really wanted was to have this, like, on display image of, you know, black versus white or whatever. And I keep saying black versus white because South Carolina, at least in the city that I saw, is very black and white. It's not like the West Coast or other places. And I'm sure there are a lot of other groups represented. Obviously, the governor is of Indian descent. Aziz Ansari is from there. But I think it's important to contextualize it in the South as black and white. But yeah, they wanted that. And instead, what happened was, like, black people of all ages and different backgrounds came together. White people came, some Latino people of different backgrounds came to physically fight them. And so, yeah, it was kind of like the best outcome from an anarchist perspective that could ever have been. I mean, not the best, obviously, I guess, you know, the abolition of the state and capitalism. But in a realistic way, I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened the way it went down.
Mm-hmm. What would you say the role of anarchist intervention in the day was? Like, would you say it was useful or not, and how or not?
I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I feel like there will be people that claim when they write back or, like, write reports on it or whatever, will use the, like, we in the way that I try not to, which is, like, which I think in some ways implies, like, anarchists had a bigger role than maybe they did. I think that anarchists or anti-racist anarchists or whatever, people that came down there mostly I mean, almost all were from the South, which is really important, I think, or came from other Southern places. And I think that in some ways, anarchists from other places might not as much because they don't see, some people don't see race as being as important or don't see things like this as being important. And I think that as a whole, Southern anarchists have a better perspective of this stuff, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're forced to, like...
It's palpable.
Yeah, it's like growing up here, if you're not a black person, I mean, maybe if you are too, but I'm not, you have to define yourself against a legacy of violent white supremacy mm-hmm. and for black insurrection. Like, it's an imperative, I think, to be able to have any sort of real political analysis here. And maybe that's not the case in places where people don't have as much of a direct thing. But to get back to that role, it's weird to see. I think that in some ways it was, like, inspirational to some. I think certain points... Okay, there's points... There's definite points where I think that the anarchist role was actually, like, helped the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the very beginning when the Klan was coming in, a lot of... When I first got to that point, it was mostly pro-Klan slash Confederate white people there. And then, funnily enough, a media person actually told the crowd, oh, the Klan's coming in this way. And so then that word was spread throughout the crowd really quickly. And so I think that that instance, a lot of, once we got that word spread, and then all of a sudden, instead of like 50 or 40 white supremacist or pro-Confederate people, there was like 300 or whatever anti-Klan protesters. And so I think that that, like, sort of like trying to like do a little bit of recon maybe was a helpful thing. And then also, so there's that. And then during the KKK rally, when people went off to go burn a Confederate flag, anarchist type people came back and were chanting "F the Klan" and had a drum. And so I think that, and that really livened the crowd up because people, at least I was getting bored and hot.
Yeah.
And so there was like a musical element, and also like no one had really said, except for individually, like sworn, because at least I was kind of nervous because, I don't know, South Carolina is more South than North Carolina, and people, there's like etiquette in the South, and so like you have to really mean it. I think like swearing means more. Maybe I'm wrong, but. It was. I think it was really helpful for the crowd because people started dancing around. The fact that anarchists brought really big banners that clearly stated, like, against white supremacy, I think, and then the Confederate flag one, or the burning flags one, and then also someone brought a drum that was an anarchist. I think those things were material help.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I think also just the fact that non-black people... are pro-criminal came... to express our, not solidarity exactly, but our, well, I guess, yeah, solidarity, but physical solidarity with people in South Carolina and people in Columbia was probably really helpful in the way in which, like, I know sometimes when I've read things about white anarchists participating in riots that are mostly not white, people have this, I think, silly analysis. This is me pitching my political thing, that it's like everyone becomes one in the moment of riot. But I don't think that's true. I think what it is that, like, people accept white, sometimes, not always, but, like, are accepting these white people because they're actively acting against whiteness. And they're actively, like, putting their safety on the line in solidarity with other people. And so I think just having white people yelling at the cops, yelling at the Klan, throwing stuff at the Klan, like, up in there, de-arresting people,
mm-hmm.
I think was important for some people, because I talked to, and I can't speak to everyone there, like maybe some people were like, why are these people here? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. And also not all the anarchists were white by any means. Mm-hmm. But I think in that way where, like, that's what people will see, just because, you know. I don't know, it's hard to say towards the end. I think anarchists there did a pretty good job of, like, doing what I liked. It's like going in groups of, like, two or three and just kind of, like, milling about. We all didn't wear, like, black block or whatever because there's a million reasons, but it was 100 degrees. The Klan
anti-masking
now is...
laws.
Yeah, there's anti-masking laws, which actually happened. Two friends of ours put on masks that said Black Lives Matter on them to distinguish themselves from white supremacists and started yelling at the police and saying, like, who are you protecting? Look at this, you're protecting Nazis. And they were detained and had their masks ripped off because of, ironically, a law that exists in most southern cities that is an anti-KKK law.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which I don't really know that many Klans people, but I've known that to be enforced against anarchists and young people that are in riots all the time, even though they're obviously not part of the Klan.
It's also to stop banditry. Sometimes it gets like around here, around Asheville.
To be fair, it's not unreasonable, but and then also because I think people didn't want to wear all black because I didn't really even think about this, but a lot of these groups are now trying to wear like black fatigues and look more militant, so as not to to shed their old imagery of like Klan robes, because that's really outdated. And so I think some people found themselves unfortunately dressing closer to the Klan than they intended to. I don't know. What else were anarchist roles? I don't know. I mean, I think that people were there throughout. I definitely, though, would give it up to, like, I don't think that anarchists definitely played as front-facing of a role as other people. But I do think that some anarchists and, like, whatever. Like, not everyone's an anarchist. Some people are, like, anti-state communist or whatever that went really like worked maybe like not like blended well as far as like not being obviously not of South Carolina or whatever, but blended really well crowd wise with other people. And that was actually a really interesting thing, is that the crowd moved in such a way that I've really never experienced, where like, because I think everyone was there in an anti-law unity, like against the Klan, against the police, and there were no leaders. There weren't, like, you'd usually expect to see some Stalinists or even the new Black Panther Party, who was having, was associated with a rally that was happening elsewhere, try to tell the crowd what to do, but no one did that, and the crowd just moved kind of collectively in a flow that I've never experienced. That was pretty amazing. So I think, I know we had some impacts, but I think just being there was also really important from my perspective. I don't know.
Can you talk about some of the anti-racists who have been arrested, to your knowledge?
There were 5 arrests, from what I understood, which is confusing because there were definitely more, like, detainments. But I think the police weren't, I saw white power people being detained, and they aren't even in the arrest, like, lists, which, of course, right, the state doesn't. Yeah.
Wants to hide the identity of white supremacists. Also.
Yeah, but they're going to give the names out of anti-racists. I'm pretty sure there were 5 arrests. 4 out of the 5 are out of jail now. They, if they were from South Carolina, got OR'd, which is on their own recognizance, which means they didn't have to pay. It was like a suspended $20,000 bail or something.
Whoa.
There are 2 white people who got arrested who were both from out of state, and they bailed out, I think, with like $213, which is like $20,130 or whatever. And then there's one man that's still in jail because he had been out on, or he had probation. And this is my understanding from talking to a friend that got arrested. And he is probably facing, it seems like, 10 months in jail at the Richland, I think, Richland County Detention Facility. But I'm not clear. It's the Columbia City Jail. And I don't know. We're sending letters to him and trying to raise money. But yeah, he'll be in jail for a while, and so hopefully we can raise money for his commissary. The friend that I talked to who got arrested, who was white, said that he had a good time in jail. Like, he's been arrested before, but he said it was cool. Like, everyone knew why he was there, and people were supportive. The other people he got arrested with, he got some of their numbers, so we're going to follow up, hopefully, with them.
Cool.
Yeah, it was positive, right?
Who are the other people that were in the jail?
Because I got kind of worried because, you know, there's white power people in prison, but I guess less in county jails in South Carolina. So it was, I mean, my friend said that there was about 90% black people, black men. And so, obviously the police weren't happy. But, yeah, it sounded like people knew exactly why they were there and gave them props for having physically, because everyone got a charge with at least, like, simple assault. So it wasn't like anyone got, like, blocking the street or whatever. Spitting. Yeah. Although that's simple assault.
Yeah.
Like, words are assault.
So you mentioned the new Black Panther Party, and a number of media outlets, including Democracy Now!, have kind of posed the event, and even I forget the late night show or whatever is on Comedy Central.
Larry Wilmore show.
Yeah, that was on last night, and I was like watching it, the subtitles, and I'm like, why? Doing the same thing of presenting that the event in South Carolina was the KKK
versus the
Black Panther Party. Can you talk about how screwed up and wrong that is, and who the new Black Panther Party is?
I mean, there's a lot of things with that. It's one of these cases where, like, you'll read a thing or watch the news and then see the imagery and then be confused how they didn't, like, do any effort. The fact that Democracy Now! Okay, so The new Black Panther Party, to my knowledge, is a, I don't know when they came about, maybe the 80s or 90s, but they're an offshoot of the Nation of Islam out of Dallas originally. They are not in any way connected to the original Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, which was originally out of Oakland, California. The new Black Panther Party, to my knowledge, once again, because I'm not an expert on these things, is a much more culturally nationalist Muslim, in that way that the Nation of Islam is, like, say, like a black Muslim organization that is like a separatist group and also is anti-Semitic and homophobic. And I don't really like them. I think they're more than anything, not more than anything, but they're distinctly a reactionary political movement, like the Nation of Islam. I think that the appeal of them is that they're militantly black. And so they, in some ways, people might think they're of the left or for revolution, but in fact, they're a right-wing organization, more, in my opinion. Whereas the original Black Panther Party was a leftist organization that had, whether or not the individuals were about this, like Huey Newton wrote statements in solidarity with the Gay Liberation Front, with they were not a separatist organization. They were against cultural nationalists. Not that I think that...
Like in L.A. with United Snakes, that's...
Yeah, or the United Slaves. Yeah, U.S. organization, which was something Karenga, and they were a cultural nationalist organization. And I don't think that, like, if the Black Panthers were there today, they would love us or something. Like, I don't think that that's... I think there's an argument that sometimes people make where they're like, they're not real, the real ones. Who cares? I mean, not who cares, but I think they're very different. And... like Bobby Seale, Kathleen Cleaver and folks have consistently said there is no such thing as a new Black Panther Party. So I think that's worthwhile to note that they're more just like taking the name on.
I want to give a shout out to Big Man Howard. If you're in the listening audience, KWTF, I remember the conversations.
I don't know who that is. But...
He was one of the founding members of the Panther Party.
Cool.
I asked him about the new Black Panther Party before and he was just like, they suck. We've tried to sue them over name rights. They're confusing people.
Oh, man.
I don't know about suing anybody about stuff, but, yeah. You know, I mean, it makes sense. I'm just... So, there was two rallies, and there, on the north side of the State House, there was a rally from a group called Black Educators for Justice, which is not actually the new Black Panther Party. They're associated, but that rally was also from the group, this group RBG, which is like a coalition of... Black militant groups. I don't know they consist like where all they exist, but I know they were having a conference that weekend in Columbia.
And that refers to
either red, black, and green, or revolutionary but gangster, maybe, which is the dead press thing. But red, black, and green, which is the African national or liberation flag. But yeah, so that group had its own rally. Like that went from about noon till three, and that rally was fine. It was boring. It was hot. Like it wasn't. It wasn't. Offensive. It wasn't anti-white. It was anti-white supremacy. People were saying black power, but anyone I think that thinks that black power and white power are the same thing are stupid. Like black power is like it's like saying that being a feminist means you're anti-man.
Yeah.
It just means taking power for blackness. But there were some new Black Panther Party looking individuals on stage, but there were also weird like punk white biker kids that had all these anti-Klan things and weird signs like my baby mama's black. So I don't really even know what that was, but it was not the new Black Panther Party exclusively, and that rally happened simultaneous to some of the conflict with the Klan. And certainly I think a lot of people that came out for that rally, or I don't know who they came out for. Maybe they came out to fight the Klan, maybe they came out for the rally, but some people did obviously come over to the anti-Klan demonstration, but the group itself did not fight the Klan. Like definitely there were no new Black Panthers fighting the Klan for sure. There were maybe actual Black Panthers. I don't know. There were some old people there. Yeah, no, that was ridiculous. The fact that they keep saying that is just... I think it's because...
Laziness?
Maybe. Well, it's either laziness or I think it's maybe more calculated. Like, they try to equate the new Black Panthers with the Klan, and then they try to make it seem like it's these two outside groups. Because they're like, oh, these groups are from Florida.
It's this just
group's
a bunch of wingnuts.
Yeah, it's just like outside freaks that are like extremists. And I don't think, even if they're separatists, they're not as bad. They're not the same as the Klan. It's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But their group is anti, like, confrontational street violence. In Ferguson, they were there trying to shut people down and yelling at women to go home. And, like,
same with during Oscar Grant stuff in the Bay Area back in, like, 2009. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're not like, going to be there fighting the Klan. Because they believe, I think, I mean, this is militant groups in general. Like, there's authoritarian communists that were at the other rally and didn't come to this because they believe that, like, they don't want the rabble or the people or whatever to fight they want to have their organized military response or whatever garbage they say. But they weren't, no. Maybe some of the people from that rally were there fighting, but it was not like the New Black Panthers versus the Klan. It was random, like everyday people of South Carolina, mostly black. But even that was like, it was probably like, I don't know, I'm bad at numbers, maybe like 60% black, like 40% others.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, how many cops were there, would you say?
No idea. There were so many kinds of cops. Like, it was like from like a meter maid to like,
yeah.
to like Terminator. I don't really know. I have no idea, to be honest. It felt like a lot, but then it felt like not enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing, is the amount of cops that were there, I assume were the amount of cops that Columbia City could afford to be there. And they couldn't control things, so that's why I was like, this might go crazier. Because they can't, there was, I mean, it's the power of the people or whatever. People definitely were running the streets, and if those groups of people had wanted to riot or like attack the police, it would have happened. I just think people were focused pretty firmly on the Klan or Nazis or their supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it wasn't the New Black Panther Party versus the KKK.
Yeah.
An important statement.
This is The Final Straw on Asheville FM, WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. You're hearing a conversation we had with John, an anti-racist insurrectional anarchist who grew up in the South. John discusses the anti-Klan rally that happened on July 18th in Columbia, South Carolina, what he saw, implications, who was there, and why.
You say stupid shit like that.
Because it's true. I mean, you act like Atlanta ain't in America. They don't give a fuck.
College Park, yeah, I rep that.
Yeah, I rep that.
Where's money? All my dogs going fetch that.
Go fetch that.
Niggas robbing in the hood, we don't sweat that.
Sweat
throw some
that.
Red dots up on your head and connect that. I guess you in the right place at the right time. And I've been drinking, I'm not really in my right mind. The wrong move will make a nigga grab the right nine. Knock your living daylights out. Come up off them stacks. If you don't give them, we gon' take them. Go and get them, or we gon' chase them. Go stick them and might erase them, or turn them into a patient. Any demons, we gon' face them, or see the pigs and all that bacon. We gon' assalamu alaikum.
In terms of like the future or whatever, do you hope to see anything like specific come out of this in terms of anarchist organizing?
Well, there, as I was saying, I'm not getting into any state specifically, but people from pretty much every state around South Carolina and South Carolina came there, and I think hopefully that furthers ties and whatnot, and, you know, hopefully people are organizing wherever they, I mean, organizing, or doing whatever where they live, or either contributing themselves or, like, backing up people who are doing anti-police work or anti-Klan work. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's I mean, obviously there's anarchists everywhere in the country, many mm-hmm. more probably outside of the South than in the South, but I think those that are in the South and grew up in the South, like, understand how important this is, hopefully. And that's another thing that I think is really important, is that the call-outs and everything for this for the anti-Klan demo, which is, I don't think that's why a lot of people, I think a lot of people knew to show up on their own. I think that, like, maybe, like, 50 to 100 of the, like, thousands of people that showed up there had any idea about the social media presence mm-hmm. of at anti-racist SC on Twitter. I think it was important for them and for everyone that was involved to, like, come at this at a very Southern angle. I obviously don't have an accent. I'm not from the South, but I lived here most of my life. And I think it was it was important narrative to counteract the, like, heritage, not hate sort of thing, or, like, the, that the South is, and then there's also, like, North, like, it's disgusted me after the Dylann Roof stuff. The media, especially, I mean, most is located in the North, and most people aren't from the South, or it's located in the West Coast or wherever, has basically just been like, oh, what do you expect? It's just, like, ignorant Southerners, and this is just what, and, like, the flag is just this, like, a loser flag or whatever, which I was like, that's just the way to make more people feel hatred towards you. And I think, like, I have not based on race or anything. I have, like, a dislike of the North. And I think a lot of people that grew up down here, grew up in marginalized areas, have that. And so I think that we don't really want to hear what, I don't know, like, some CNN or MSNBC person has to say about this, unless it's in support of fighting the Klan or being anti-police, which obviously they're not going to be.
Right.
CNN is based out of Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. I mean, CNN is based out of Atlanta. So is, I think, I mean, Time Warner in general. I mean, there are things, but they're not like, their perspective is,
you're not
going
to find many people who are giving commentary on this station unless they're being interviewed that have Southern accents, for instance.
Yeah. Like, I think that, like, a good Southern voice right now is Killer Mike, the rapper, who's half of that Run the Jewels and also has been around in Atlanta for years. He's like 45, but he's been really good. But yeah, I think it's important to come at this from this, like, to show that the Confederate flag, I do know people that are not racist that like the flag, and they don't really, they're not like the most, like,
it's like a disconnect.
I mean, they might be, they're probably racist, like how everyone's racist, but they're not, like, actually actively racist. Like, they hang out with black people, hang out with Latinos. I think they see that as a rebel symbol. Like, and I've known, like in the past, like, Ludacris, Lil Jon have used the flag. And I think it's kind of like in the past when hip hop was very, like, it was antagonistic towards the South until now the South runs it. But it was sort of like a F you to the North, and, like, this is our own thing, which I think these sorts of, like, anti-Klan demos are our own. Like, this is the New South, like that person said. Or not even the New South, so it's always been the South. Like, the South is the blackest place in the country. It's the most, like, the Civil
New
War.
Africa.
Yeah, I mean, it is the Republic of New Africa in some ways. And I think it's important to recognize that, like, the Civil War wasn't a war that the North fought against slavery. It was this war the South fought for slavery, but it was a war that the North fought to keep the Union. And the Emancipation Proclamation didn't free anyone because it only freed slaves that they had no control over. And then they kept slavery in states like Missouri, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Maryland. So I think it's really important to like claim our heritage, or the, maybe not mine, but people in the South, like, anti-slave, there's a lot of abolitionists, there were a ton of black people that obviously didn't want to be slaves.
Indigenous
resistance. Yeah, I mean, this is the area where there's so many tribes, like the Lumbee and the Seminole, which are really just like, not really, but in some ways are just
still
kind of like
resisting.
Yeah, it's like still resisting, and are a makeup of runaway slaves, white people that refuse to be part of white society, and native people all joining together to fight against the plantation system or fight against colonization. And there's, I mean, there's people whose heritage was the Civil War, but who don't want that. Like, and yeah, a lot of white people fled. Like, there was a repressive home guard in the South that forced people to go to the Civil War. It's not like it was this entire region was all for the Civil War. I mean,
there were parts of Western North Carolina,
yeah,
that
was,
were like fighting for the Union for
and,
whatever that's worth.
And for that, it's not even like, so that's another, that's like fighting for the Union or fighting in the Western North Carolina. It was sort of just, yeah, like if you were for or against slavery, or if you were for whatever, like it was like they were fighting for the Union, but really it was like fighting for themselves.
And that's kind of like an underpinning of the, what's the, the Hatfields and McCoys.
Like, oh, really? Like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the McCoys were more recent immigrants from Ireland, lower class, Catholic, and tend to be supporters of the Union. Also intermarried with black folks. Mm-hmm. And the Hatfields were more established, Scots-Irish, Protestant, and more tied in with the white supremacist structure in that place. So that's like another like racial dynamics underpinning religious and class and stuff like this.
Cool. Yeah, and like slave uprisings are obviously a heritage of the South. Like like the Gullah/Geechee culture of people who are still basically resisting whiteness in the islands of South Carolina and Georgia, who are currently trying to get more land for, like, taken back that they were promised by Sherman or whatever. Or what, you know, like, there's a ton of instances. I mean, people have fought off the Klan in the South a million times. The Civil War probably would have kept going if it wasn't for what W.E.B. Du Bois calls, like, the Black General Strike, where just, like, 500,000 to 1 million slaves just refused to work and walked off the plantation. Like, I think it's important to give all those people their heritage and their culture that is the opposite of the Confederacy, but is also not necessarily the Union. And it's also important, I think, to show the world, like, that people down here aren't all just racists. I mean, that's, like, so simple, but, like, and that people are, I think there's also that docile image of the South from the Civil Rights Movement, which, to be fair, maybe people didn't fight back armed because they would have gotten killed at the time. And then some people did resist with arms, and some people rioted. Like, it wasn't all cut and dry, but that is dead, I think. I think that the, like, I can't quote these songs because they're very
explicit,
but it's like, people are like, this isn't the slave days. People are going to fight back. Like, people don't.
I think there's a certain, you got to admit, though, there is a certain dignity in struggle and forgiveness, and that's not the same as weakness. Like, the responses of the family members of the people that were killed.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I don't think it's inherently weak. I think it's a different thing.
Mm-hmm. And like, honestly, walking into a bunch of, you know, riot dogs and batons and stuff during the Civil Rights Movement is not a weak.
Oh, no, not at all. No, I don't think that the people, I don't think that SNCC or any of those groups were weak inherently. Like, sometimes groups push for things as opposed to more confrontational structures, and sometimes that was because their leaders wanted to be more legitimate to white people, but sometimes it was because, yeah, it was life or death, and they chose slightly less likely dying. But yeah, I just think, well, so yeah, I think it was important to confront the two narratives of, like, one, heritage not hate, but also the other being, yeah, like, just, like, the South is just a stupid place for everyone's stupid. I mean, it's simple, but people think we're all idiots down here, and it's not the case. Like, I don't know. It's, the South has a long tradition of fighting against capitalism, against slavery, as long as, maybe longer than anywhere else, because this is the first places to be settled.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Virginia and North Carolina are some of the first colonies in the New World or whatever, so.
Yeah, North Carolina has a huge, extremely rich history of being a place where, like, outlaws fled to or whatever.
North Carolina, the swamps of South Carolina, North Carolina, and Virginia are essentially, like, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this before if you talked about Dixie B. Dam
in his books.
Yeah, of, like, native slash black slash white resistance to colonization. And so, I mean, and yeah, and, like, North Carolina, there's the man Robert F. Williams and their group had armed self-defense before any, I mean, not before, but openly talking about it before anyone else, and is credited with inspiring Huey P. and Bobby Seale. So, like, yeah, and then there's the Deacons for Defense, and then there were just, I mean, there's, but that's, those are two groups that officially said it. Like, people were arming themselves forever.
And these are just the examples coming from North Carolina and not, like, well, no, stuff in, like, Tennessee or Alabama.
Yeah,
or,
well, the Deacons for Defense were Louisiana and Mississippi, and they had, like, 16 chapters. But there's actually a book by a professor at Georgia State called We Will Shoot Back, and it's the history of armed self-defense in the Mississippi Delta from the Civil War on. And so I think that's important to, it's really hard to find, but the man's name is, I can't remember his name, but he actually has written on the BLA as well, the Black Liberation Army.
There was one book that was being, it was like, God, who had that? Maybe it was over at DBN or whatever.
But, oh, you should definitely get it.
Anyway,
But yeah, I just think it's important to recognize a resistance culture and history that's still alive in the Southeast. Like, you know, we're not, or people here, I don't think we are is a good way, but people here aren't going to just take the KKK coming to their town. And I think I've talked to friends about this a lot, that I think that when stuff starts happening more confrontationally in the Southeast, especially like South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, related to the Black Lives Matter movements, that's like when we'll see it truly be more, I mean, it's been revolutionary and reform, but I think that like Jackson, Mississippi, or Alabama going off will really scare the society, because there is a belief in like a domicile people in the South. And then also like, because those places have way more Black people than anywhere else and are still rather repressive. Like, I don't know. I think our heritage is not the same as the people that have the Confederate flags, and then we're still Southern, or people are still Southern.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's all the questions that we have. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
I got another question, actually.
I'm just talking.
What's up with Little Boozy saying that stuff about the cops and being like, oh, I'm not totally against, not all the cops suck?
I believe first of all, I'm not Little Boozy, but I've been a fan for longer than Ferguson, since like, I don't know, what album? Maybe it was like Super Badass, which I think came out like 07 or something. So before Prison. I mean, first of all, he's a musician, so why are you going to...
That's not the real question I had.
Okay, I was like, whatever. He's also like, he's on probation forever, so I think he's trying not to go out to prison.
So, John, you've been around, like, around North Carolina for a while.
Yeah.
And there was actually, to bring it to a more local circumstance, I believe back in the 90s, there was a KKK rally that happened in the Asheville area. Can you talk about that at all?
I can talk about it from what I know. I wasn't... first of all, I would have been like 10, but also I wasn't living here at the time. But folks that I think you know that work here were part of that at some point. So, yeah, I do know, though, that the KKK of some group, I don't know which, had organized a rally in downtown Asheville in 1997. And anti-racists, anarchist-type folks, who there were very few of in the area at the time, and the city was not known as, like, a protest city. I'm sure it was an alternative place, but it was definitely not, like, popular in the way that it is now. Like, it wasn't a big deal. But people went to, like... Oh, yeah. Wait, this is
broadcast. Probably folks from Chattanooga came over.
Oh, yeah, because there's a lot of
Lorenzo
Cambo
Irvin and Jonina Irvin.
Both. I forgot about that, yeah. I mean, this is broadcast in Asheville, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, people from, like, Hillcrest, like, Lee Walker. I'm just saying housing projects, but as, like, I could just say housing projects, but I'll name it. Dude. People went to, like, Hillcrest, Lee Walker, Livingston, PVA, and all over the place.
The Woods?
The Woods. Actually, yeah, and what is that place? Mountainside, that doesn't exist anymore because they got bulldozed for rich white people condos that never even got built. There's a ton, because Asheville is insane. It segregates Black people into prison islands, essentially. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, people went to all those housing projects, then also to the east side and to Burton Street neighborhoods, and were like, hey, the Klan is coming to our city. We should fight them. And surprisingly enough, actually, the leader of the NAACP locally, from what I'm told, actually encouraged people to go to the protest, which is against their policy, and I think he got in trouble for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually they organize like counter unity rallies somewhere else in town. But yeah, 1,000 people showed up to protest the Klan, and I hear they marched down Patton, and then like from, I don't know where exactly, but they marched to the City County Plaza. And I know people were like spitting on them and attacking them the whole time. There's like pictures of people trying to grab people's hoods. There's also pictures of like older Black men throwing like Black power fists and little kids there. And I know that in the media article, if you look up old Citizen Times on microfiche in the library, there's a, it's like there was a line of riot cops, which I didn't even know they had those here until later. Just standing, but they couldn't do anything. So people were just throwing rocks and like eggs over the cops. So yeah, the Klan got pretty much chased out of Asheville by just everyday Asheville people. It was like just everyone. But an interesting thing is that they said they were going to come back in a year, and then they put out this press statement saying that they would bring their like Blackhawks or whatever. They're the ones that wear black, and they're the armed security of the Klan. And so that if there was any like rock throwing that they'd solve that problem in 88 seconds, which is a direct reference to the Greensboro Massacre, which was when in 79 communist groups organized a Death to the Klan march in which five people were killed, I think. Yeah. Five people were murdered by Klan and neo-Nazis. And so they made a direct threat to the citizens of Asheville. And at the time, not that I ever give credit to politicians, but Lenny Sitnik, who was a weird freak mayor of Asheville at the time, basically used it as a way to say that they were threatening the citizens of Asheville and actually banned the Ku Klux Klan. And so, like, Asheville's one of the only places I know of that the KKK are legally not allowed to come to, which is something. You know, it's like riots work. In that same way that, like, that's not all we ever want, but I prefer not living in a place where the Klan is able to come. And, you know, like, the state responded to people fighting them, not, like...
That's with like Robert F. Williams' example that you brought up. The town that he grew up in, or that he was living
in, Monroe,
actually banned at least KKK motorcades because
the motorcade... Oh, I didn't know they banned them. I just thought they couldn't physically come.
No, because they were so afraid of their local politicians and white concerned citizens getting killed because they participate in the motorcade as KKK. Once they tried to drive up on that first NAACP meeting, Williams reconstituted the NAACP chapter because everyone ran with a bunch of veterans, like black veterans who still had their guns, and they shot
at them, and then I know they didn't come back for at least a while. I mean, maybe more recently, but and then that same Klan's group went to Roberson County to fight. It was the same group. It was this guy named Catfish something. I don't know his name, but he was saying basically, and this is not my opinion, but quotes, that there's just a bunch of mongrels out there in Roberson County, speaking of the Lumbee, who were and they were going to have a rally out there, and then 500 Lumbee surrounded them and shot out their lights and, like, pushed them out of the town. And there's all these amazing footage of young Lumbee people. I think it was 1950 or 1953 or something.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, or 53, I think, was in Monroe, so I think this was 54. But anyway, so there's a long history of anti-Klan popular violence in the Southeast and all over the country, but I don't know.
Well, thanks for sharing.
But Lil Boozy is great.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it too. Thanks for coming on.
Of course.
You've been hearing a conversation we had with John, an anti-racist insurrectional anarchist who grew up in the U.S. South. Next week, we'll present the rest of our conversation, which includes discussion of media coverage of the rally, background on the new Black Panther Party, and even a little local history. Did you know that the Ku Klux Klan got chased out of and banned from Asheville in the late 1990s? More on that next week. Or if you can't wait, this episode is available as an especially long podcast for this week's episode with a bit of Dirty South rap thrown in, swear words and all, and the whole conversation with John. Check that out by following the link in this week's blog post at ashevillefm.org/the-final-straw. If you're listening live, stay tuned for Onward Through the Fog with DJ Jake for 2 hours of laid-back music from all over the spectrum. Get lighthouse, let up, get down, then up. The boy got a barracuda pipe, you can tell. Got hope for the living, got prayers for the dead. In the sky, got whiskey and rap for the voices in my head. Got kush for the pain, cause the world is dangerous. Driven great men insane, anchored itself with angel dust. Somewhere between love and lust, a nut get bust and a baby get made. It seemed that trouble us and follow us like all our days. In every holy book it says we suffer, that's what it is. So riddle me this, from the womb to the tomb, why do we fight to live? RTJ, little toast to the no ones, with an eye to the masses. RTJ, to the ones for the riches, from the ones to the rags. RTJ, little smoke for the gone boys, little nod to the spirits. We're still here running around screaming. They're still here pointing their lies. RTJ, got hope for the living. Woo. Got prayers for the dead. RTJ, in the sky got whiskey and rap for the voices in my head. RTJ, got kush for the pain. Woo. The world is dangerous. Ripping great men insane. Anchored itself with angel dust. You say you wanna be my leader. I think you wanna be my God. You say you wanna side of the righteous. Right. I say I'm gonna hang with the wrong. There's truth for the filthiest. There's lies and the law. You want a whore with a white dress. I want a wife with a thong. Love, care, and division. I don't fuck with the symbolism. I don't give a fuck about power. I pluck an eye out of pyramid.
cut an ear from a mouse cat. Go Van Gogh on a house rat. Find another mind in a flower. Motherfucker, I'm really not hearing it.
A pope is a fraud. A church is a lie. A queen is a Sam dang thing. You should pray to your fake God that she died. God really exists, I tell you like this, it resides inside. And anybody telling you different, just telling you religion, trying to keep your ass in line. I kill my masters, I miss with none. That means when I die, that's it, my style is gone, I'm a one of one. One half of the great, RTJ. Defeated the odds, went to war with the gods, earned all our scars and came back straight. RTJ.
With a toast to the no ones, with a nod to the masses.
RTJ.
To the ones for the riches. From the ones with the rags,
R-R-R-T-J.
Little smoke for the gold boys, little nod to the spirits. We're still here running around screaming, they're still here pointing and laughing.
R-T-J. Got hope for the living,
woo.
Got prayers for the dead.
R-T-J.
In the sky, got whiskey and rap for the voices in my head.
R-R-R-T-J.
Got push for the pain,
woo.
The world is dangerous.
Woo.
Driven great men the same, anchored itself with angel dust. Angel dust. Angel dust.